Hi, I'm Sean Healy, and you're listening to Tools. Hi everyone, Sean Healy, personal change agent here, and you're listening to Sean Healy Tools, a podcast designed to support entrepreneurial couples, people in business partnership, and anyone looking for more tips, tools, and strategies to add to the quality of your life. Today is episode 53. There you go. It shows how on I am for this episode. This is going to be interesting. Episode 53, entitled Working with Narcs, which is a shorthand for narcissists. Thought I'd do this episode due to some of my own personal experiences in business, as well as some of the experiences of people I've worked with and supported, because dealing with narcissists in the workplace can be very challenging. Because of some of their behaviors, it can also be deeply mystifying. So there's a lot to be said about narcissists, and we're only kind of go briefly into some elements. And again, there's lots of different terminology out there in the field for dealing with different types of narcs. But if you can start to recognize narcissism, there's a kind of a spectrum. It's not like there's full-blown narcissists and everybody else. There's a spectrum of behaviors. Part of narcissism is a psychological, in its extreme elements, it's a psychological defense, which means that the person needs to feel a sense of superiority. It's very adolescent in how it goes about that, or very childlike, highly demanding, and very specific about the level of attention, validation, and admiration and accolades you give them. Generally, full-blown narcs have a lot of internalized shame that they are completely cut off from. And so if we're talking about someone who's what's sometimes termed a cerebral narcissist, these are people that are super slick, super smart. They say all the right things, and they use their intellect often to gain power over others, to what we call shame shed. They're very good at triggering shame in us because they're projecting their own inability to be with their own shame. They'll flick it out on you. Deliver kind of word sentences that trigger you into shame and kind of uncertainty, and they're really, really good at it. I'm often kind of amazed. I kind of sit back in a disconnected place, a disassociated place, and just kind of watch the language patterning sometimes, because even though it's driven by deep wounds, there's an amazing level of adaption and skill to keep a very painful world running. And so they're brilliant at putting on a show, engaging us. Certainly at first, that's part of their allure and drawing us into their web, is they can be so charming and so charismatic and so appear so smart. And then if we're looking at somatic narcissists, then these are the ones that, they look magnificent. So they use their physicalness to draw us in and trigger our kind of limbic animalistic responses. That doesn't mean to say everyone that's super in shape is a narcissist. I'm not saying that at all. And then sometimes you've got the crossover where the person is a combination of the two things, super intellectually sharp, but also dresses absolutely immaculately, keeps their body in absolute physical tip-top shape, and there's this real element of perfectionism that comes across. And the problem sometimes with dealing with narcissists is, like I said, they can lure us in very well, and things will go great until you go against them, because they need everything on their own terms, and some of them are very good at very sweetly moving everything to their own terms. Others are a lot more abrupt and direct and almost vicious about that. But you'll notice if you look at the relational dynamic, it's very one-sided. And provided you're doing things in a way that is consistent with them and you're not triggering any shame in them, things will go along lovely and they perceive that you are of some benefit to them, either because, you know, your status is considered to be worthy of hanging around with them. It's reflective of their sense of inner superiority that, you know, they are associated with you, or they see you as some element of advancement to their career. Then you're going to sit pretty comfortably with them. They'll put on a great show for you. And however, if you're not perceived to have enough status or enough clout in the workplace, or you work below them, watch out, because you will have a very different experience, quite possibly, with them. Especially, you can find that they can be stunningly cold and withdrawing or very attacking if we're not doing the things the way that they want. And so what I find interesting when I come across people like this is trying to get a sense of where they sit on the spectrum. Some people, you know, look, we all have moments where we go into a sense of, you know, feeling, buying our own press, so to speak, you know, feeling like we deserve special treatment, all that kind of stuff. We're not talking about moments where we fall into these sort of potentially unhealthy patterns, but more so the people that end up kind of living there or are addicted to that element of the process, are so disconnected from their own shame and completely unwilling to look at it. And what doesn't work is to take them on front on, unless you really are in a position of superiority to them. You need to be utilizing other strategies just from your own self-preservation. Because like I said, the problem often with these narcissists is that, you know, because they rely so much on the adoration of others, they really do great work and they can achieve some amazing things as part of the byproduct of what goes on. Inevitably, it's like a giant house of cards, and due to the fact that they love the accolades and recognition, but certainly do everything they can to avoid being held accountable or responsible. So you'll often find when things are going well, they're highly visible. And the moment things don't go well in the workplace, they are shifting the blame on others, or they just simply in some way withdraw and disappear. They're just not around. And I've certainly come across narcissistic managers in workplaces where when the teams were doing well, they were showered with praise. The manager was always around lauding his or her team. You know, it's his or her team. It's not the team. And then the moment budget wasn't being achieved, you couldn't even get the person to return phone calls. It was just this frosty sense of silence, you know, the staff being completely confused. You know, when we need help and when we need support, we can't get our manager. But the moment things are going well, hey, suddenly they're back in the office, the phone calls are getting returned, there's glowing praise. And the thing is that they can be, you can really, even when you start to see this, it can still be so alluring when you're in the warmth of their glow. There's nothing like it. Even when you know the kind of person that you're dealing with, and that praise is very fragile and conditional and is probably not going to last long. Wow, there's just something about it when you're in that experience. And that's why sometimes it's very hard for people to break out of that dynamic, especially if you were raised in it. It's unfortunately unconsciously familiar to you. But in our workplaces, if we're recognizing that we've got the suspicion that somebody is quite strong in the narcissism spectrum, because we've noticed that they always tend to talk about themselves a lot, they're always talking themselves up. We notice that they can be very dismissive to people who they don't agree with, or they can put out these shame-based barbs. We're noticing that they, you know, everything seems to be done either overtly or covertly on their terms. And we're starting to pick up these patterns, then there's a number of ways in which we can start to manage this. You know, if you're taking somebody on, you need to be, if you're setting boundaries, it's not about the techniques that you use to set boundaries. It's about really being in still presence when you set those boundaries. So what narcissists can't deal with very well is people who can hold on and manage their own selves. They rely on getting into dynamics with people who've got a lot of unresolved shame, because it makes it easy for them to flick that their own shame onto that person. But if we're somebody that's strong and still in our presence and we don't buy into that, if you're dealing with a cerebral narcissist, you better really have your logical arguments prepared, because they're going to try to eviscerate you, and you have to be so strong in holding the space and really knowing what you're talking about. Once again, we can pander to their ego a little bit. Oh, I was really hoping that I'd be able to get that project from you, because I knew you were going to do a brilliant job on it. I couldn't wait to show the other people in the team, you know, things like that, where we're pandering a little bit to the narcissist's ego if we need to do that. And we can, you know, we can use a sense of humor to also break the tension. And then if we're kind of on the outer and we're being punished in some way by the person, that we're able to really have a place of observing our own experience, you know, because what narcissists sometimes can do is, because they're so good at twisting reality, they can really make us doubt our own experience. And you start to go, oh, maybe I did come across too strongly there, or maybe I am asking too much. You know, that's a stunning skill. And so what narcissists, the gift of the narcissist is they really let us see where we're at within our own, our ability to face our own shame, our ability to have our, you know, really believe in who we are and our value, and our ability to be rock solid in our own sense of reality and be able to look at the situation. We're looking at the facts and not getting caught in reactive feelings. So they're a good barometer of letting us know where we're at. And when I do, I don't actively seek them out, but from time to time when I come across them, the extreme narcissists probably make up about 1% of the population. But then people up the spectrum, you know, again, there's varying, but you're going to come across them, especially in status or hierarchical based industries, where people are looking for kudos and elevation, and it's, you know, there's a dynamic of power and recognition. These are kinds of, and status, these are the things, those are the environments that are going to draw these kinds of people in. So we need to be prepared that from time to time we're going to come across them. And then what do we sort of do about that? And we also have to recognize that sometimes in certain business systems that I've walked into, everybody recognizes that this person is toxic, and yet they do such a good result that management are willing to look the other way. And if the management is not strong enough to take the person on, like I said, eventually things will implode. That, you know, it's, while we might have short-term success in the business, it's recognizing if you're a manager of these people, you know, you really have to keep a tight rein on them. You really have to have a sense of your own belief as a manager if you're going to use them. And they can be, if contained and directed, you know, they can be a great asset. But often, by their own very nature, they'll end up sinking themselves or becoming more of a detriment to the organization. So it's recognizing sometimes that, you know, even though they're producing a good result, if they really are affecting the undercurrent of the business culture and harmony, you can track that in a number of ways. If they're in a management system, look at how many days their staff are taking off. One of the biggest indicators I use when working with businesses is how many days are staff taking off. You know, and if we're seeing that staff in certain environments are using a lot of their sick leave as well as their lot of holidays, then that's probably an indication that people are not traveling too well Plus also what you'll find sometimes is that if people below them are coming to you and complaining about them, yet your experience with them is completely different. You go, I don't understand. They're brilliant. They're charming. They can never do enough. Then I would be looking at that polarity with some degree of interest and go, hang on a moment, have we got someone? Because eventually they'll be coming for you. So better to recognize those things up front. And like I said, it really does demand a strong and united management system to deal with someone like this effectively. But it certainly can be done, and make sure that all exchanges are documented, because they can continue to move the baseline to suit themselves. They can, in extreme elements, just completely deny certain things that happened or twist reality. Make sure once you realize this, everything is documented. It's just so important, because you might unfortunately need that later. So, you know, the thing that trips people up is, you know, these are deeply wounded people who've got some really stunning adaptive skills overlaid onto it that can look very alluring in terms of what our society appreciates. You know, they present really well. And it's separating the strategy, the defense strategy, from the wounded person inside. That doesn't mean that we just let them do anything we want, but we can see that this is a deeply wounded person. I find that helps me to stay out of emotional reactivity, to stay in a place of compassionate observer where I can watch the dynamic play out, and this helps me to operate with as much clarity as possible to come towards a solution in the situations where I've dealing with or advising people who've got these extreme types of personality elements playing out in the workplace. So above all, you need to manage your own emotional state around them. Don't get triggered. Don't get hooked in. Don't get triggered in your shame. You really are looking at, what is this person evoking in me? Because it's very unlikely you're going to be able to change them, but you could certainly change the way you respond to them, and that will automatically change the dynamic between the two of you, because they'll go find someone easier to play their stuff out with. If you're grounded and unmoving, in the end they go, nah, this is, you know, let me find easier prey, because they're not going to want to be exposed. They're not going to, but, you know, trying to get to a place where you're recognized as an equal and just as superior, by nature of the psychological dysfunction, that doesn't work. You know, they're always got to pick a gap or find some element of us where they keep themselves in a position of superiority. And once we recognize that, we go, okay, it is what it is. They are who they are. And now I don't have to react to that. I just have to respond to it and manage it relative to whatever my workplace goals are. So I hope that gives you a bit of insight. But like I said, managing your own emotional state around them is so important. Using humor, using strategy, these are the things that are going to help you. What doesn't work is being triggered in your own shame and reacting back. Just you need to manage yourself, and that will already begin to help to manage them. So there we go. Narcs, you know, working with narcs. There's so much more that could be said about this, but I'm hoping, as a kind of an intro into that space, that offers you a few insights, because it is very demanding to be able to kind of manage this, especially when the symptoms are in their extreme. But hopefully, like I said, I think once we know a little bit about what we're dealing with, that helps us. We're not so mystified and shocked by the things that we do. We can just go, oh, okay, you know, that's extreme, but it makes sense given the person and you know, how wounded they must be. Okay. Like I said, it gives us a degree of empathy. That doesn't mean, like I said, that's not the same as allowing behavior, but we really need to be in a clear thinking space in order to strategize what we're going to do, in order to get the best and most productive resolutions in our workplaces. As always, thanks for listening. I hope you found the episode valuable. If you're just joining us, please go to iTunes, download, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review, because that helps this series to be more easily reachable and findable by others. And I'm really passionate about extending these skills out to support people. I absolutely love doing this. I'm on Stitcher and Podbean as far as other podcast mediums. And you're welcome to visit me at my website, emergencetraining.com.au. Always interested in ideas for episodes. We've done a few episodes over the course of time that have kind of been request ones. They're good fun to do. And as far as my crossover element, I've got the Sean Healy YouTube channel, the Relationship Resourcing Series. You're welcome to subscribe and follow along there. The two mediums are designed to interrelate and support each other. So there's a number of ways in which, if you're interested in learning more and following my work, I would be profoundly grateful. And I really enjoy kind of doing these things and putting them out there, because I know how much I've been inspired by the brilliant work of others in these sorts of areas. So I like to kind of keep these things flowing, and I'm of the opinion that, you know, hopefully it finds the people who need it and adds value to people's lives. So thank you again for listening to the episode. I hope it gave you food for thought. And until next episode, bye.